Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, we are recapping the first two episodes of The Last Dance. In this episode, I'm joined by my buddy, Nate Noling, but in every episode, Monday after the Sunday airings of the five separate blocks of The Last Dance, we will have recap episodes up of The Last Dance, because that's all we got right now. That's all we are watching. That's all we are paying attention to. So I hope that you guys are enjoying these. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can subscribe on patreon.com/takecast or just leave a rating and review on iTunes. That will be very appreciated. And now let's go ahead and just get into the episode. Hello, everyone. Bringing in my buddy, Nate Noling. Haven't had him on a podcast for a while because he doesn't want to talk about cards with Sammy and I, but gonna have someone new on the show every week to talk about The Last Dance after it airs. And Nate, pretty appropriate first guest because you're actually a Bulls fan. You kind of grew up watching Michael Jordan. You're a little bit too young to remember like peak MJ, but you have Michael Jordan memories, at least more than I do.
Yeah, mine was, it was a weird growing up because I was born in 92 and was obviously a basketball, like loved sports growing up. And so growing up, it was more of like the idolatry of MJ, like when I was 4 or 5 years old. When we were 5 years old, we got a dog and we named him MJ. I mean, it was just everything in my life was Michael Jordan. And so it wasn't until I was obviously older that I understood the dominance of MJ, but growing up, he was always just like, I mean, he was who I idolized. Every time I had a basketball, it was just like, oh, MJ, the tongue out, MJ. I mean, he was just, it was everything. So growing up in Chicago, I definitely have a different perspective of it than most people, but last night was, it was awesome.
It was. So what was, I mean, I think the documentary was great, right? Both episodes I thought were great. I thought they were really well made. I thought that, you know, Phil had a lot of cool stuff to say. Honestly, I was assuming that when this got made, I was like, oh yeah, they'll have MJ talking some. Like they probably sat down with him for an hour or two and talked, but I feel like there's like 10 hours of interview that they did with him. Like it was way more Michael, because normally when you watch a documentary about someone, it's like people talking about them, but he was like way more involved in talking about it than I had expected at all.
Which I think is awesome. And the whole idea of like, they captured this footage in 87 or in 97 and then didn't touch it for 20 years because MJ didn't want it to be touched. And then when LeBron won in 2016, he reaches out to his buddies and is like, okay, it's time to get some of this footage out there. Like, I just love that all of this footage is some of it we haven't seen in 20 plus years. It's just been sitting in a vault somewhere, waiting for MJ's approval. I mean, it's just
one thing I did think about is, you know, how good is the LeBron documentary going to be? Because I guess LeBron himself is not as interesting of a person. Like he's a little bit more lame and corny because he's so aware of like, you know, everything he does ends up on social media and ends up being a thing. But everything that dude has done since he was like 16 has been documented by someone. Yeah. So
I don't think it'll be as interesting because the thing about Michael,
because we know
the first, yeah, he was like one of the first to like live in this lens that everybody wanted to be and everybody talked about, where LeBron is just like, I mean, he's known this is who he's going to be from such an early age that like, yeah, I don't even know who authentic LeBron is, you know, where,
right,
like what we see is just real raw MJ. Like that's, I don't know. That's why I love MJ so much. And it's different than LeBron or, you know, most athletes today. It's like, you can't even compare it.
So the first episode really was about Jerry Krause. I mean, the episodes are all going to, so the, you know, all the episodes are going to deal with this final season and deal with different elements of Michael Jordan's career. So the first episode was Jerry Krause and his career at, you know, the University of North Carolina. And It is really striking for a lot of people who don't know the MJ story, or, you know, a lot of 20 somethings who just know about Michael Jordan from Space Jam and stuff. It is very striking that a front office executive, you know, just made the decision to dismantle a team, like, and before the season had even started, you know, made the decision to dismantle this team before the season had even started, he said, Phil, you're not coming back. Said, Pippen, you know, we don't want you. We're not interested. You know, basically said, Michael, thanks for your service, but you know, that's enough. Like, it strikes me as one of the most disastrous.
No, to be fair, Michael it was rebuilding around Michael. Michael was never in the picture to leave.
But
Jerry Krause wanted to keep Michael at all costs.
But Mike said, I'm not playing without Phil. Exactly. And Krause said, I'm not. Krause had his fishing buddy. Yeah. And another funny thing, I mean, it's not funny, but Jerry Krause is dead. So Jerry Krause is one of the main characters in this film, but he is not, you know, alive to defend himself. And that just did not stop anyone from going hard after him, which is for people to go hard at you after you die, like, you had to have really pissed them off while you were alive.
Well, I mean, do you remember Michael's Hall of Fame speech when he talks about all the people that are there? And then he says, and Jerry's here. I don't know who invited him. I didn't invite him. Like, as he is, like, getting his Hall of – like, he's still trying to dunk on this guy that he hated so much. But I have a different take on the whole Jerry Krause thing. I think the Jerry Krause thing is – there is more credence to, like, the way he – operated than I think people give him. It's easy to look at it now and go, how could you have done
that? Well, now, because everyone is so into NBA GM cosplaying, you know what I mean? Like, everyone with a Twitter account is like, I wouldn't give him that. Yeah. You know,
from a GM standpoint, he won the game. He literally got Michael Jordan. He got Scottie Pippen. He had the best, potentially one of the best values of all time. When you look at Scottie Pippen, I think Scottie Pippen is in the top 40 to 50 players of all time. I don't think that's really even an argument. And he paid him peanuts. I mean, if we looked, I mean, I don't know how you could develop a formula, but if you could develop a formula of, like, salary adjusted for output over the 7-year contract, I bet Scottie Pippen was one of the best value contracts of all time. From a GM, that's what your job is. He did that. He got Rodman. He got Pippen. He built a team around Jordan and won 6 championships. And
I think is funny about, like, so I do agree with you, but I mean, you know, a big part of the GM's job is keeping everybody happy, right? Like, that is
isn't that the coach's job though? Like, that's where I think the GM and the coach is different, and that's why I think Phil was so great, because Phil knew how to manage the players, cared about all this stuff. I mean, Phil literally allowed Scottie Pippen to say, I'm gonna take my summer, my time, I'll get the surgery as soon as the season starts. If that happened today, any other coach would lose their mind. And Phil was able to manage that. But from a GM standpoint, your job is numbers, is to look at raw values.
Imagine Elton Brand, like, openly antagonizing Bill Simmons and being like, Bill Simmons, you suck. Or Ben Simmons being like, Ben Simmons, you suck, bro. You got to start shooting threes or we're not paying you. Like, that would not fly. Like, GMs openly antagonizing star players would not fly.
No. But I do think, like, when you look at the situation he was in after 6 years, realizing I only have a couple years left of Michael, we need to rebuild around Michael. Rodman was 36 at the end of his contract. Pippen was still had some years left of his prime, but Pippen was not as good after he left the Bulls. I think Krause's, like, overall ideals were good, but I think the way he executed it and just his terrible personality was his undoing. It wasn't like his decision making. I think his decision making was probably fine. It was probably just his, you know, watching him getting dunked on yesterday felt weird to me. Like, this dead guy who literally built one of the best teams of all time, and we are making fun of him because he's fat and short. Like,
it was pretty funny. I mean, come on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was funny. And also, it's like, we got to open this up, because it can't be Michael getting dunked on, right? And it can't be Phil getting dunked on. So because Jordan does have some creative control over this, I would assume. Well, not creative control, but he certainly is, like, this is Michael Jordan's story. So he's got a lot of the lens of the storytelling here, and Michael's story and Pippen's story and Phil's story, they're all going to say Jerry Krause was a fat loser. Like, that's their story and they're sticking to it. So it's like, And no one is left in Jerry Krause's corner.
Yeah, you can't defend him. So, yeah, I get it. I feel bad for him just because he's passed. And, like, if he was a GM in today's day, I think he'd be looked at as, like, one of the smarter, you know, forward thinkers of his time. But it is what it is. This is the story when you go against one of the greatest athletes of all time in MJ.
Very, very funny moment. Like, I thought it was very funny from the first episode, or just maybe shocking, is all the highlights of Jordan in college. There's no 3-point line. So he takes that jumper in the title game against Georgetown, and he's over there in the corner. And it's not a corner three. It's a little bit shorter, but it's basically a corner three play that you'd see, you know, loads of NBA teams draw up in, you know, the game winning possession now. And there's no 3-point line. So MJ is just sitting there in the corner taking that jump shot. There's no 3-point line. Like, I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. It's crazy to watch how different basketball was back then. I mean, it's crazy.
Almost. I mean, even the highlights of young Michael Jordan, right? Like, it really looks like they're playing a different sport. Like, I know MJ's great, and what, like, I, my goal of doing these recap episodes, by the way, is, like, I'm not gonna do, like, the Gen Z thing of, like, oh, well, LeBron's clearly better than him. Like, I just want to enjoy these. I want to enjoy these documentaries because we don't have a ton else to watch and discuss. So I'm not gonna take that angle. But, like, I mean, this defense that these guys are playing against Michael Jordan, it literally looks like he's going half speed and he's just, like, laying the ball up over these short white guys. And it's just really funny.
Everybody just looks so lanky. Everybody just looks like they're missing 25 pounds, you know? And so everybody looks like their hops are incredible because they are so, like, skinny and tall. It's just crazy where today, I mean, everything just looks different.
Yeah. Everyone is, everyone's like super, everyone in the, Clips is skinny. They all just look skinny. Like, Michael now doesn't look anything like then because he just, I don't know if it's, you know, everyone in America is fat or athletes are just thicker and stronger. So another thing that is so hilarious about the Michael Jordan story, we're watching a 10-part documentary about him. Guy won six NBA championships, won the Olympics, like, so on and so forth. Literally not one person going back to that draft ever argues, oh, well, you got to take Michael over Hakeem. Like, Hakeem was so great, and centers and big men were so important in basketball then that people don't say, well, oh, they should have taken Michael. Like, no one faults the Rockets for taking Hakeem.
That was one of my favorite parts of the documentary, watching the clips of people talking.
The old guys.
Oh, he's only 6'6". You can't carry a team at 6'6". You know, Michael's got to realize he's not 7'1" and can't. Like, the old school basketball, just watching that was like, that was what he stepped into. He literally changed the whole dynamic of, like, a guard of small fort could do this, you know?
Yeah, during his career, it changed from, you know, Ewing and, you know, all those guys. And then, you know, during his career, it was Magic and it was Bird. And then it was Michael and it was Stockton and Malone for the Jazz. Like, it was much less. And then, you know, then obviously Kobe and Shaq after them, which is just, it is another thing that was just very, like, it's very jarring to see all that stuff from that. It was also like Jordan doing his own laundry. Right, Jordan doing his own laundry in his little townhouse in Chicago. Just a lot of, they did a very good job, I think, of, like, getting that nostalgic '90s feel, like going with, like, old '90s rap, and that all the old, like, VHS footage just is, like, very well preserved and very well done. That was really cool.
The letter to his mom about sending money for lunch.
Send me $20. Here's my bank account information. So I need it. Another funny thing. He played 3 years in college. No, and he wanted to play a fourth. He wanted to come back for another year at North Carolina because he was like, you know, I like playing college basketball. I think it's fun or whatever. And, like, now, dudes, if you score 12 points a game in the SEC, like, okay, I'm going to the NBA, I'm going to the G League, I'm going to go play in Europe, whatever. Like, no dudes are trying to stay more than a year in college.
Yeah, it's crazy how different that was. He would have played four if it wasn't for Dean Smith.
So, 63 points with no 3-pointers. Is there any player in the NBA now who could do that? Durant would be the only one, I think, and it would just be all like 18 footers. Like it would just be all him taking his 3-point shots, but from like the weak side at 20 feet.
I was gonna say Durant can't do that without threes. My favorite part of the document, I'm watching with my wife last night, and she's like, "Wow, the way they're shooting this, it makes it look like he was the only one on the team who scored." And I said, "He basically did. He scored 63 points in a play like that." I don't know. It's just the way he played was just different. And I think Durant.
So let's actually go look at the Bulls roster from Michael Jordan's year, because I've never even done this before. So Michael Jordan, 1984, 1985 in the Bulls season.
Under real quick before you look, how many names are you going to remember? I'm going to say under three.
So I read a book about Michael Jordan. I don't even remember which one. You know, I don't know if it was the Jordan Rules or Phil Jackson's book, but like at some point I did read a Michael Jordan book. So I'm going to set the line at the 1984-85 team at knowing 3.5 of the guys other than Jordan. Okay, so Jordan led the team 28.2 points per game. So that's a lot of points per game. I only recognize two other names. If you had to guess the second point scorer on this original Chicago Bulls team.
I don't know.
Orlando Woolridge, 25-year-old guy. He played for a long time. He played until he was 34. Guy played a lot of basketball. This was so he scored 28.2 points per game. There were only three players on the whole roster who scored more than 10 points a game. He played 38.3 minutes per game, played 82 games as a 21-year-old in the NBA. No load management for Michael Jordan.
I mean, and that's it. The load management part was another thing I was thinking about yesterday as I'm watching, like, when you just think through, like, obviously when you're watching this, you start to think through today's day and age and you think through Golden State and things like that. But just the way that the Warriors, like, progressed through seasons was so different than the drive that Jordan had that, like, it's hard to compare. It's hard to compare.
I mean, the only year Golden State went ham was the 2016 season, the 73-9 year. And that was, and all of those guys, Draymond, you know, Clay, Steph, all of them were like, it was so draining. It was so terrible. Like it was so hard to get up and go play every single day. And I mean, I think probably a lot of Michael's teammates felt that way playing with him, it seemed like.
Yeah. And Michael would bite off anybody's head who wouldn't do that. Like I don't know how he would do in today's day and age. With the way that people talk about like load management and things like that.
So I had forgotten that he broke his foot. I had just, you know, we don't really talk about that in his second season. He played in only 18 games in that second year, played 25 minutes a game, 22 points a game. But this is when you start to recognize names on the roster. George Gervin played there at the end of his career. Charles Oakley signs, John Paxson is on the roster then. So that's when you start to recognize more of the names on the roster is in 85, 86. But and I mean, I'm sure, you know, his foot is killing him. And, you know, now they basically put him in, you know, in a mobilization unit and the guy wouldn't move for 6 months. He goes back and is just playing basketball at North Carolina without telling the team.
He comes back and says, "I've been playing 5-on-5 all week." Like, I'm just trying to picture like an NBA athlete of his caliber, like in a press conference saying, "Yeah, I've been playing basketball all week," without the team doctors, without like.
I mean, that would be like grounds to have your contract terminated or to be fined. Imagine if Steph has this hand injury and he's like, "Oh, actually, no, I've just been lifting, bro. I've just been in the gym lifting." Like the Warriors are just like losing their minds at him.
I love Jordan's anti-tank, like just boldly in the media, just going after the GM.
You got to do it though. Okay, I think Steve Kerr hates Michael Jordan. I think Steve Kerr just does not like Michael Jordan. That is my opinion. What do you think?
Do you have any rationale behind why? Like, is it something with the success that Kerr has had with the Warriors that he
so?
you feel like, or do you feel like you hated him while you played with him?
I think he just basically thinks about team building and the game of basketball, like literally the exact opposite. I think that, like, we got to win the game, and for us to win the game, I got to be my best, I think is like not how Kerr thinks of basketball. I think Kerr thinks about it like, to win the game, we have to be our best, and we all have to sacrifice the most possible to the team, which is literally the reverse of the way that Michael Jordan thinks about it. And I think that Kerr is like very much like a kumbaya style leader. And I also think that because Kerr is like this really limited athlete, right? Like the guy, like, I mean, literally he probably runs the same 40 as your dad, you know?
We wouldn't know Steve Kerr's name if it wasn't for Michael Jordan though. And I feel like Steve Kerr is smart enough to go, I was able to play alongside of one of the best athletes of all time. Like, and you can't hate, like, the guy has made your career, made your life, given you the opportunity to be anything because of that. Like, I feel like it'd be hard to hate somebody that was that good, even if you despised everything about them.
I mean, maybe he doesn't hate Michael Jordan. Maybe he doesn't hate Michael Jordan, but just like the way he talks about him, the way he talks about those Bulls teams, and you know, and the way he coaches this Warriors roster, I always feel as if, you know, that it's he's just being like, I do not want to ever be involved in a team like that ever again. You know what I mean? Like he just does, like, that's probably why he loves Steph so much. Have you ordered Ethan Sherwood Strauss's book yet? Have you got a chance to read it? No. or anything? So I just ordered it. It has not gotten there yet. And I just I cannot wait to read about how much Kevin Durant hates Steph Curry. Like, it's going to be – it's very much an aside to what we're talking about, but that part is just going to be phenomenal because, like, Kevin Durant left because Warriors fans love Steph Curry too much.
Yes, Kevin Durant cannot handle that. He's a – Kevin needs to be the guy because he is, like, not self-confident enough by himself. Like, and I think that's the difference between, like, KD and most other superstars. Like MJ would walk into a room and say, I'm the best and I know I'm the best. I don't care what anybody else says. I will beat you until you know I'm the best. Where like KD is like, I want to be the best and I want you to think I'm the best.
But I
like,
want you to think I'm the best even without me having to try that hard to prove it to you.
Yes. It's this very like, that's why KD is just an odd superstar. Like personality wise.
And what's so funny to me is that, you know, most people's big basketball player that they love, if they're our age, it's Kobe. If it's like, you know, slightly older than us, it is Michael Jordan. But for me, like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook are my favorite basketball players, you know, because that's like literally from like the time that I really started to follow and love basketball, it was those guys. And really, it was Kevin Durant. And so like thinking about your favorite player being Kevin Durant and then thinking about your favorite player being Michael Jordan, it's just so interesting how those guys are so different, but they were, you know, I mean, obviously LeBron, like, you know, people our age love him too, but I don't know, like I've never been a fan of LeBron the way I was of Kevin Durant either. And it's like Kevin Durant is just a normal guy who happens to be amazingly good at basketball, which is really weird.
It's hard to like genuinely like or idolize LeBron, even though he is like talent wise, physical.
He doesn't even seem human.
No, like there, and he's just so, he's a difficult guy to like just because his personality seems so fake and off putting. It's just like, I mean, I love the way he plays the game. Everything.
Yeah, he's like a politician though, kind of. Yes, like it just, and which is like whatever. I mean, LeBron has a lot of things he wants to do in his life outside of basketball. And I don't begrudge any of those things, but it's like, I just, you know, like MJ is like a drunk gambling addict and Kevin Durant is like an insecure guy who can't log off of Twitter. And I understand those emotions way more than I understand LeBron and all of his stuff.
Yeah. The desire to create a fake Twitter account so that you can defend yourself online against the trolls. Like, yeah, I mean, Kevin, he's just an insecure, yeah.
Okay, here's a good question. Would MJ have been one of those athletes like Tyrann Mathieu who just responds to people trolling them on Twitter all day when he's not at practice? Would Michael would have been one of these people who's like, yeah, well, you're broke, like, to people on Twitter all the time? I think he would have been. I think if he played in the social media age, he just would have been roasting people on the internet all day.
Yes, he would have. I mean, you literally watch him roasting the GM, like, regular. Oh, those diet pills? Oh, you want to come take layups with us? We'll lower the hoop. Like, I mean, he literally roasts everybody. So, but I also can't see MJ wanting to spend, like, time on social media. Like, every time he's done, I can just see him go golfing or go play poker or cards. Like, I don't know.
Oh.
I don't see him spending a lot of time on that.
Do we think we're going to get good gambling stories in this documentary? Yes. So we haven't talked about Scotty yet, but and we will here in a second. But so Scotty's like, oh yeah, Michael bought me a set of golf clubs, and like, oh, that's really nice to buy rookie golf clubs. And Scotty's like, actually, no, it's not. He just wants to gamble with me and take all my money. Yeah. So that's going to get there. But I mean, like, how did Michael start gambling? How did Michael get interested in gambling? Like, I hope that we get those stories. My guess is we're going to hear that he started playing cards that year when he broke his foot, and that's how it started.
Yeah, I think they're going to get into that, and they kind of foreshadowed it a little bit when he was talking about the traveling cocaine circus, and he was talking about how, you know, I don't do drugs, I don't do any of that, I don't do women, no, none of this, no drinking. Yeah, that didn't start till later in life, or something like that, where it's like he alludes to that coming. So, I mean, you can't have a Michael Jordan documentary without going into the gambling stuff, or else you're just going to get flamed for inauthentic journalism for the rest of your career. So, like, you can't produce a documentary without it.
So, mind-blowing fact from this documentary. Scottie Pippen, 1996 Bulls. He's won the NBA championship 5 times. He led the Bulls in assists and was their second leading scorer, and I think their third leading rebounder. And he was not a top 100 paid player in the NBA.
No,
that's gotta be one of the best. Wild, dude. I mean, if that happened today, the guy would just not go to training camp, and he'd be like, well, if I just have to not play. Like, under no scenario would that ever happen in today's NBA.
But I think everybody places this on Jerry Krause as like, oh, how could you do that to him? But at the end of the day, that's Jerry Krause's job, is to get value, like get performance for the lowest dollar possible. Plus, if you understand Scotty's like background and the fact that like Scotty didn't play NCAA basketball, he went to NAIA. He wasn't like playing professional basketball.
He played at an online university before there was the internet.
Yes. Like, for him, like the value of like, I got to sign this 7-year deal to get this guaranteed money. He had to do what he needed to do for his family. The Bulls needed to do what they needed to do for a business decision. Like, I don't fault anybody in this other than maybe Scotty's agent. But I'm guessing
Scotty even have an agent?
Yeah, I'm guessing Scotty wouldn't have, like, trusted an agent when there's millions of dollars that he's going to provide for his family here. So, like, but why does everybody fault the GM for that? Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, also, he just ran really bad. Because, like, so also there's this other thing that people think about the NBA that it's always been popular. No, the NBA
situation that happened in the 90s was crazy.
The NBA used to, like, literally tape delay. The NBA finals used to be shown on tape delay. Like, the NBA was, like, less popular than, like, I mean, they said in the documentary that the indoor soccer league in Chicago used to sell more seats than the Bulls. Like, the NBA used to be, like, not, like, it mattered, but it was, like, a very niche thing in the United States. And you know, Michael changed a ton of that. And also, I think the Olympics, weirdly, have done a lot to help the NBA, because they talked about that in the documentary a little bit, that Michael, you know, a lot of people probably hadn't even seen him play until the Olympics, and then he became like the biggest star of the summer, basically.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at Michael's salary, I mean, Michael's contract was also unbelievable. Have you looked at Michael's contract at all?
Yeah, I saw someone tweet that his total cumulative earnings, like including those Wizards years, was $87 million.
So
of
Michael
contract.
Michael didn't make more than $4 million per year until the 96-97 season. So like,
crazy.
He was like as underpaid as Scotty was, maybe more. I mean, literally from 98 through I mean, yeah, it's nuts when you look at the salary. Yeah, because it was like 2 million, 2.5, 2.5, 3.2, 4, 4, 3.8, 3.8. So, I mean, he was the best player in the world under $4 million. Like, yeah. And then all of a sudden in 97, 98 was when he signed the $30 million. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, some of the other Scotty stuff. It seemed like it was very easy for them to trade up for him. Like, it seems like they basically met with no resistance. Like, if you really liked a guy in the draft back then, you could just go and trade for them, and it wouldn't be like, because, you know, there aren't nerds on the internet who are developing sliding scales of what every pick is worth. So just be like, oh yeah, we want Scottie Pippen, so we'll give you this guy and this pick, and we'll take him. We'd like to go trade for him.
Underrated line of the show. He's sitting there with his Seattle Supersonics hat on, talking about how thankful he is to be in Seattle, and the reporter has to tell him, oh, you're actually going to Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, you're wearing the wrong hat. Can you imagine, like, thinking you're going, and then all of a sudden a report, and you just switching tunes like that and going, oh, just kidding.
So that actually, that is something that existed in the NBA then, and they still do that now, Nate. Do you know that? That they don't, if the pick has been traded that day, they still go have you put the wrong hat on. I think the last guy to do it, I think, was the Sixers kid, Zaire Smith, but he got the pick got traded, and he just went up with the wrong hat on. The brothers.
But now you have agents and stuff that are all like talking to you, or family who like, where it's like, imagine finding that out from a reporter and you're just by yourself.
A reporter. So the brothers, they like in the books and stuff, they don't really talk about Michael's brother. They talk a lot about his dad, but it had not, I mean, maybe old people know this, but I had not known that, that he was like that, like, sick and driven and competitive with his brothers, and that a ton of it came from his brothers being better at basketball than him.
Yeah, I love that. Anytime you have like a crazy competitor like that, you always have an under like story of why. And I love hearing that from like such a young age.
Okay, let's see what else do we have here. I mean, really I just was fascinated by so much of the Scottie Pippen stuff. Like, my favorite thing is when guys who end up growing like 6 inches over the summer, like, were playing point guard, and then they end up being, you know, power forwards or small forwards. That was what happened with Blake Griffin. Seems like that's what happened with Scottie as well. Those dudes are always like the best players.
Yeah. Didn't that happen to AD too?
Yeah. 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 He was. Yeah. The David Stern appearance was not ready for that one. That one was Bill Clinton shows up in this documentary talking about seeing Scottie Pippen when he was a kid. Yeah.
I love the, you know, you have Obama and Clinton and his former Arkansas governor, former Chicago resident.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. Yeah. I mean, I just think that, overall the coolest thing from this documentary is just that we all have something to experience together at once. We're gonna have the NFL draft too, obviously, but after the NFL draft, The Last Dance is, I mean, it's gonna be the only show in town, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I selfishly wanted to watch it all at once and just binge it and just, like, you know, not get off the couch for 10 hours, but it is kind of cool, like, going through Twitter last night during it, like, oh wow, we're all doing the same thing again. And I can't remember the last time I've opened Twitter and been talking about something with so many different people who are all tuned in on the same thing. So that's cool again.
Yeah. You haven't played in the RG Poker Open yet.
No, not gonna.
We got to get you, Nate, playing the cards. Okay. Let's see. What else do we have?
Yeah, I would lose money real quick.
So
you have to talk a little bit about, talk to me about how you think MJ, like, today's day and age, not, don't compare him to LeBron, but like, talk a little bit about how you see him historically.
So I think that
I want to hear your perspective.
So I think the right way to think about Michael Jordan is that he has the greatest career in NBA history, maybe the greatest career in sports history in terms of MVPs, finals MVPs, championships, you know, impact that he had on the game and everything, but is not the best player. Like, you just, I don't think you can watch him play and then watch the stuff that LeBron does, even watch the stuff that Steph does, and be like, those guys had equal impact on the game as it was being played, because Michael got to play against a bunch of plumbers and farmers, you know? And that I don't think that should take away from his accomplishments, because he had the diet and nutrition and coaching that he had at the time. And even like the mathematics of like the understanding of basketball, like his coach was, and he played in seasons in the NBA without the 3-point line, you know, like just their, the understanding of the game of basketball was so different. It's like, it'd be like, you know, could Brooks Koepka go back to 1980? Like, he would win every PGA champion. He'd win every event by 5 strokes, because he'd just hit it further, and he's like bigger and stronger. It's just a different game. I think if we want to say, you know, how would Michael do in today's NBA? He would have to play differently, right? Like, he would have to, maybe best mid-range shooter of all time. You know, he had a very good true shooting percentage and everything, but the most 3-point attempts he ever took per game in a season was 3.6. I'm pretty sure that was a Wizards year. Steph and Clay and KD and these guys, they take over 10 a game, you know, like they're just launching those threes. And we know that 3-pointers have a way bigger influence on the game than 2-point shots. So I think my middling answer is that I have a hard time translating the things that Michael did really well to today's NBA, because no team does them. No team bases their offense around 18-foot jump shots, you know?
Yeah, he would be inefficient the way he played in today's
game. Well, he would just play differently. Like, if you told Michael is a smart competitor, he'd be like, okay, I gotta learn to shoot 3-pointers. And I actually think the fact that his vertical leap is so crazy, you know, like, that was one of the things that he was an insane athlete. Like, they showed that clip of him at UNC hitting his head on the backboard going for the block. Like, that kind of vert, I actually think, would make him an even better 3-point shooter. And then the dude also seemed to never get tired. So that's mm-hmm. like shooting fatigue also would be pretty big too. I don't want to say, you know, mean things about Michael Jordan. You know, there's too much stuff. But I mean, yeah, if you transported 1988 Michael Jordan in today's NBA, like, the dude would be Donovan Mitchell. But that's not realistic.
Yeah. I think he part of what made him great was like his mental edge and that competitive.
Yeah, he would be like a great golfer, a great poker player, like, because the guy just has the brain to win.
Yeah. I would say he's the greatest player of all time, but he's not like the best player of all time. And I know that sounds like a weird, like, great versus best, but I would say, like, Tom Brady is probably the greatest quarterback of all time.
Even Same
though
thing.
Tom Brady's not 100... the best quarterback of all time.
So I
think
yeah.
great and best are different. And I think that's what I would say. Like, and I don't even want to try to talk about like what he would do versus LeBron or anything like that. LeBron's got 30 extra pounds and has grown up in a whole different era. But like, what Michael did was greatness that I don't think we'll see. Like, nobody has that same edge and drive that he did. Like, nobody.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think the Tom Brady analogy is a good one, where like literally not one person ever, if they had a game to save their life, would take Tom Brady over Patrick Mahomes. Well, I mean, some people would, but they would be wrong, right? Like, yeah. Patrick, if you had a game to play for your life and you had the first pick, you're taking Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Tom Brady has inarguably had a better career and probably will have a better career than Patrick Mahomes, because it's really hard to win that many Super Bowls. It's really hard to sustain that excellence over you know, that long period of time.
Not just probably, he will. There is, you're not going to see another quarterback with that. Like, you're not. It's just not going to happen in today's day and age in the NFL. Brady.
Yeah, it's just too hard.
So, yeah, but I'm just loving this. The nostalgia, everything about this documentary is so great.
Yeah, like the old footage, the music. I mean, we have J.A. Adonde in here. We have Obama showing up. Clinton shows up. Scotty's accent is great. Love listening to Scotty talk, like that slow Arkansas draw. And I also forget that Jordan has an accent, because you just mm-hmm. you don't ever really, like, I mean, I think about Michael Jordan playing basketball, not about talking. Like, his accent is funny to me. Not funny, but just, yeah. like, it's interesting sounding. And
we're
going to
get some
great.
Good Rodman stuff, too, soon, I bet.
I mean, they showed in the trailer for this, I mean, they showed Justin Timberlake and Carmen Electra. I mean, we have everyone. It's like Drake is going to show up in this at some point, right? Like, everyone is in this documentary. And, I mean, I think that some of the stuff that probably delayed it coming out was they spent over the last couple months probably getting like FaceTime interviews and stuff from people, like, yeah. So it's just it's great. We're gonna have these episodes out every Monday. It'll be, I think, Overzet's gonna do one with me, and we'll just have some guys rotating in and out. Maybe, I mean, Sammy was old enough to be alive during this, so maybe he will come on an episode if he feels so inclined. But what are you most looking forward to throughout the rest of this?
I think I'm most looking forward to, like, it contextualizes his greatness to people like us, like our age, who weren't around for it. And I think that's what's great. I think it's easy to like dunk on MJ and talk about LeBron and talk about Steph or people like that when you don't have enough footage or context of like how good he was. And I think what this documentary is going to do is place his greatness in like today's day and age for us in the social media era to be like, oh dang, this guy was the GOAT. Like, you know, I think that's what I'm excited for.
Yeah, I am super pumped for this. So everyone, you know, thanks for listening. Obviously, if you guys want to watch this, so if you live in the U.S. and you have a cable subscription, you can just watch on ESPN. It's super easy to do. If you don't live in the U.S., they are all on Netflix, and I think they're all going to be on Netflix when it's done anyway. So this will be some good evergreen content. So thanks for listening, and we will be back later this week with more episodes, and then of course in every Monday. After The Last Dance airs, we will have recap episodes up as well.